All right, good afternoon. How are you guys doing today? Ready to solve the most significant public health crisis in America? All right, great. We are each going to introduce ourselves, talking about how to tackle the very serious problem of social media and teen mental health. And we have an amazing panel of I'm just so honored to be here because these three have sparked the social dilemma, sparked New York legislation that is now spreading to California, and Attorney General Bonta has been leading the charge on protecting kids and showing what's possible with existing laws. So why don't we just start with Attorney General Bonta? Just everybody's going to speak for a few minutes about who they are and why they're here. And then we're going to move into a conversation.
Thanks, Zephyr. Well, good afternoon, everybody. Rob Bonta, California Attorney General. Honored and grateful for the opportunity to spend the afternoon with you and talk about this really important issue that we're facing when it comes to children's physical and mental health and their experiences online. And I come at this issue from a lot of different places, probably most importantly being a father of three children, all digital natives, all who are online very often and have seen in real time the challenges, the problems, the mental health challenges that are created. And so I think lived experience is always an important motivator for the action that we take, and I'm grateful to be in a place where I can take action and help contribute to potential solutions. Was in the California legislature for 8 years, just over 8 years before becoming Attorney General, and believe in the power of solutions provided through legislation and our legislative bodies coming together, bringing the voice of the people they represent to the forefront and identifying the problem and providing a solution. And so very clear that there are very few brand new ideas, mostly ideas that are really good that haven't been used everywhere they should be used yet. And so we have often in California looked east to our siblings in New York who have led on many things. I think we have a really good race to the top where we're both trying to do the best things for our people before the other one does. And that's a healthy competition that keeps us at our best to make sure we deliver solutions. So I want to thank New York for their thoughtfulness and innovation in the legislation that we're going to talk about today. We basically copied it and thought that California should benefit from it too, and think it's a really thoughtful, innovative, insightful proposal. As Attorney General, also believe in the power of litigation, enforcing existing law. So we have launched investigations into some of our biggest social media platforms, Meta, that led to a multi-state bipartisan litigation, and we have a current investigation against TikTok, and we're getting to an action point on that as well, a decision point. So, you know, whether it's being a father, attorney general, legislator, I think all of those roles are important as we look at the challenge that we're facing today. And that challenge is too many children, so millions of children are facing anxiety, depression, suicidal ideation, body image issues, learning loss, the list goes on and on because of social media platforms. It doesn't have to be this way. It can change. It can be different. We all believe in free markets, but free markets don't always provide the solutions that we need. So government regulation, folks who will protect the most vulnerable, the kids without a voice who need to be protected are very important. So excited for the opportunity to talk about what we're doing in California, but super grateful for what New York has done, is doing. Grateful for our federal government for having hearings and lifting up the issue. Very infrequently these days do you see bipartisan action. This is one of those places, and I think it speaks volumes about the problem and the universality of the pain and harm that people are facing and the need to change it. So just honored to be on this incredible panel and look forward to our discussion today.
Senator Gonardis.
Great. Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I am New York State Senator Andrew Gonardis, representing the great Republic of Brooklyn, where I am born and raised. I am a three-term state senator, and I am the author of New York's version of what California has already adopted, which is the age-appropriate design code standard. And I'm also the author of two bills that we'll talk about today that really go to the heart of how we feel social media is impacting kids most negatively, and that is the collection of their data for monetary gain, but more importantly, the use of predictive algorithms, or as we call it, addictive algorithms, which are designed to keep kids' eyes glued to screens, showing them content that they're not signing up to see, they're not looking for, but that the app assumes they want, and then leading to significant mental health harms. I'm also a father myself. My kids are not of social media age yet, but I'm terrified that if we don't take action now, it's only going to get worse and worse and worse. And while, you know, to the Attorney General's point, we're seeing some signs of life at the federal level right now with hearings and legislation, don't forget the last time Congress passed a law to protect kids online was 1998. I don't know about you guys, but I was still getting AOL discs in the mail back then, and you were still getting online via dial-up. Like, the world has changed 1,000 times over, and certainly the internet has changed 10,000 times over, and we shouldn't be using laws that were imperfect even then as the only protections we have. And so excited for this conversation and to keep doing this work, which is critically important for some of our most vulnerable, you know, people in our society, which are kids.
Thank you. And Joe.
Hey, everyone. My name is Joe Toscano. Just want to take a moment to say thank you to Senator Gonardis and his team for putting us together. It's not easy to get all of us in a room at the same time in the same place, so it's been a lot of effort on his side. We've been working together on things off and on for probably 4 years now, four, yeah. And I know the effort he's put into this stuff, so it's a big deal that this is getting through finally. My background, I am the CEO and founder of a company called DataGrade, where we are mapping and assessing risk of data sharing across the internet, the impact that has on consumers and especially children. And what I've been doing for the last 7 years is advocacy towards a more responsible internet. I used to work for Google. I was a software developer and designer. I left because I saw the abuse of data, and I said, this is getting wild. We need to have some protections, and we need to talk about it. And if I stay consulting for Google, it might take me 10 or 20 years to see any change, so I need to leave and educate the public. I wrote a book, toured the world speaking, was in The Social Dilemma on Netflix, if you've seen that, and have helped draft laws and frameworks in various different places around the world. So I've seen the growth, and I think probably some of you are here today just asking the question, like, are we ever going to see change? That's what I hear a lot of people ask me. And I'll tell you something of optimism before we get going. You know, I'm going to probably sit here today more as a technological historian than I am a lawmaker. But when I left originally, I was speaking to major media groups and told to go home, go put on my tinfoil hat, sit in my parents' basement. And today, I'm on national news broadcast saying almost the same thing I said back then. Now, it's been 7 years. That feels like a lifetime to me. But what that is a very rapid change in the grand scheme of history. So what these guys have been doing and are doing is moving faster than you may understand in the grand scheme of law changes. And I'm very excited to be able to support these efforts, be here today.
Great. And my name is Zephyr Teachout. I'm a law professor at Fordham Law School. I most recently took a leave, though, to work for Attorney General Tish James, where I worked on some of the legislation we're going to talk about today. I also was a teenage girl. And I also was an athlete. So when I 2 weeks ago was on a call, I was talking to a athlete who had gone on social media to learn about sports and almost immediately started getting served content that led her to a 16-day stay in intensive care after a significant eating disorder. She is now bravely speaking up about that, but she is not alone. The smartphone is introduced, and targeted feeds are introduced around 2010, and since 2010, we have seen a radical uptick in significant mental health disorders for teenagers. There is no other plausible explanation for this kind of uptick. The rates of significant depression have doubled. Depending on the particular disorder you're talking about, it has increased between 50 and 150%. And when I look back and imagine being a teenage girl now, looking at the rates of persistent depression among teenage girls, it has almost doubled in the last 10 years. These are young girls engulfed in sadness and hopelessness. And the number of hours a day you spend on social media impacts that. And these kids know it. They know that they are addicted, and we have to do something. So what is exciting is in the last few years, one of the biggest untold stories is the wave of legislation that is actually taking this on. There's so much creativity in this town. There's so much sense of the future. And I'm here because we got to take that sense of the future and really fulfill the real promise of tech, not the tech that will depress and degrade our democracy and really harm people's lives, but the tech that actually can lift us up. So with that, I want to turn to the three of you and say, what's going on? What do you see with teenagers and social media?
Yeah, I mean, I think you captured the sum of it, which is just massive mental health challenges that are undeniable. Our lived experiences, our own eyes, our own experiences, and our own families with our own children tell us that. So does the data. So does the U.S. Surgeon General, who has advised that over 3 hours online, it will double the rates of your mental health challenges, your anxiety, your depression, and 8th and 10th graders spend on average of 3.5 hours online. So we know that the depression and anxiety is happening at scale, and it's connected to social media. And it's not just we on the outside. Social media platforms know. They know that their product, the way they have designed it, the features that they have on it, the autoplay, the endless scroll, the likes, the plastic surgery filters, the notifications and alerts and beeps, they know that it creates addiction and that it creates depression with a particular impact on girls, but on all young people. And they lie about it. They say the opposite. They internally acknowledge the truth, but externally claim it doesn't exist. And that is one of the bases of our claims against Meta, that they are providing dangerous, damaging, and deceptive practices by lying about it. And it's folks, you know, it's not Meta generally, it's Mr. Zuckerberg specifically, who knows, for example, that they have children under 13 actually on their platform, millions of them. I think they thought 1/3 of 10 and 11-year-olds, or 11 and 12-year-olds, excuse me, at one point were on their platform, but had said to Congress, we deplatform them regularly. They also know that their platform is addictive, but they claim it's not. So everybody knows the challenge. It's what we do next. Those who are creating the mental health disorders, the parents, the kids, doctors, white coats, scientists, we all know. It's undisputed and undisputable. And the only question is, how are we going to fix it? And the platforms like soft touch regulation or no regulation, it's our duty to regulate in pursuit of the safety and health of our children. And so if they're not going to do it themselves, and they can do it, it's not so complex or so difficult that they can't change some of these features. It's simple. And we have provided ways for them to make changes. Having, instead of algorithmic feeds, having organic or chronological feeds, having limits as a default for how long a young person can be on a platform. Our proposal in California is for 1 hour. We took on the very crazy idea that you shouldn't get alerts between midnight and 6 a.m. if you're a child. In the middle of the night, just don't send alerts on the platform. And so there are ways to make progress and address these challenges. I think left to their own devices, the social media platforms will not do it. So we're there to assist with our legislation and our litigation.
I was talking to an opponent of legislation last week, and they said, and I said, well, what do you think we should do if not legislation? And they said, fix patriarchy. I was like, I'd like to fix patriarchy too. But in the meantime, let's do something. So, Joe, what do you see?
You know, I'm going to come at it from the stories I've seen as I travel and speak to people. I've spoken to everything from parent-teacher organizations to one of the starkest memories I have is actually just the moment after the Social Dilemma launched in Utah, Sundance. We had 2,000-some students in the audience. It was multiple decks of people. And when we got done, it was silent, dead silent. When we had adults in the room, it was claps, applause, excitement. These kids were shocked. About 5 minutes later, after a couple kids had stepped up to question, we had one up in the upper decks who didn't even need a mic, but was bawling their eyes out. Because not were they only bullied and isolated, but them specifically, they said, my parents don't even pay attention to me anymore because my parents are addicted. Right? This is a crisis. This is what's actually tearing our democracies apart. It's more than just the statistics you read about because a lot of this is not even quantifiable. Right? I've actually helped advise some of the AGs who are pursuing antitrust on Facebook and Google and advising on how we understand the attention economy. The problem that you see often in that conversation is the fact that these tools are free. Right? So historical antitrust, that becomes hard to rule on. But if you actually take the economic value of this, you'd have to trace down the trickle-down effects of increased psychological care, right? You'd have to trickle-down effects of lost economic opportunity because people are spending 2 hours at work on their phone that they shouldn't be. Like, there's so many different things that we can't even calculate. So for me, lots of stories we could go through over time and obviously clear statistics. I think what we all need to face in this reality is that you know, as companies grow, as they get larger, there are harms that will happen. That's part of business, and it's not always intentional. The thing that we're trying to fix here is that now we've seen historical precedents, empirical data over not just years, but going on decades at this point. I don't believe a company's bad because they make a mistake. I believe they become bad when they see the research, verify that it's fact, accept it internally, and as Rob mentioned, deny it publicly. Defy the law, and refuse to make change. So I think all of these bills, what we're trying to do now, as Rob said, is start to prescribe some solutions a bit more, because it seems that even with the more, let's call it pro-industry regulations that are just kind of getting basic stuff set in place, basic rights, general guidance, that's not impacting them because they said, well, technically this doesn't fit me. With more prescription comes challenges in terms of changing the industry, but there's also reason to believe at this point when they're not making change that perhaps we do need to prescribe more. So I really appreciate all the efforts that have been going on, and I think there's some interesting solutions to be spoken about today.
What do you see, Senator? You've been such a champion in New York, a real passion project. So what do you see, what inspires you to do this work?
You know, it is, as everyone's kind of alluded to already, just the documented harms that we're seeing manifest across an entire generation of people right now is just really, I think, just stark, right? I mean, we can all cite examples of like the one person or the two people or the three people who we know have had an issue. Right, we can just say, you know, oh look, this makes us feel bad. But when you actually dig into the data and you see exactly what's happening, how the impact, the doubling the rate of suicides amongst young preteen girls, quadrupling the level of hospital admissions for self-harm for teenage girls. Tripling the rates of self-reported anxiety and depression for kids, boys and girls. We should all be, you know, just shocked by the severity of this crisis. And this is what's being reported. This is what a generation is calling out for help. I'm not surprised that you had an audience of just an empty, everyone just silent, because it's like being told exactly what's been ailing you your life. And you finally get to the doctor and says, I figured out what you have. And here's what it is. And then you just sit there and you process it. And you're like, wow, this is what's going on. This is why I feel so bad about myself. This is why I have these thoughts. This is why my life is the way it is. And just yesterday I saw an article. There was a Pew study by the Pew Center. Like 50% of teenagers say that they feel happier when they don't have their phone in their hands, but almost the same percentage said they don't think they can live without their phones. This is like tobacco. This is like alcohol. This is like opioids, right? This is stuff that is intentionally designed to addict. And to the Attorney General's point, you know, the companies know this. They know what's being done here. They know the harms that they're causing, and they're making a choice to not want to do anything, which is what's, I think, making this so much worse. Because we know the harm, we've diagnosed the ills, and no one seems to be willing to want to offer the medicine here, which is just really, really crazy, and I think speaks to the urgency of why you're seeing so many states take action. You're seeing efforts, through litigation by attorneys generals across the country. You're seeing all of this happening because nothing else is being done. And yet, year after year, more kids are going to the hospital, more kids are saying they feel unhappy, more kids are trying to take their own lives, more kids are being exposed to content like Andrew Tate, and you know they're being raised on a generation of toxic relationships because that's what his message and his gospel is. And it's getting worse and worse. It's not getting any better.
So, what are we going to do about it? I mean, we are here at South by Southwest, so we're going to do something, right? What's on the table? What are we going to do? Attorney General?
I mean, in short, action. And I think everybody has a role. And, I say that as someone who grew up with a father who marched in Selma, Alabama as part of the Civil Rights Movement, organized for voting rights and civil rights, two parents who worked for the United Farm Workers of America, lived in the headquarters, helped create and fuel one of the greatest social justice movements in the history of our country, and a mom who's an immigrant from the Philippines who fought for the restoration of democracy after a dictator took power and helped topple the dictator an ocean away. So I've seen the power of agency and everyday people coming together to make great transformational change and to confront and face our challenges and say we can't accept the unacceptable. We have to do something. It has to be different. It has to be better for our children. We owe them more than they're getting. And so, you know, parents have a role. The power of moms and dads, of parents, to rise up and say, this is not acceptable, what's happening to my children, are in a very important voice in this coalition. Of educators, you know, our teachers and our superintendents and those who lead our public and private schools who are saying our kids can't learn. They're facing learning loss because of social media platforms. Of our, and of course of our leaders who are elected and given authority through our democratic process by the people they represent to confront these challenges and to deliver solutions. We all have a role. And we all need to speak up, and doctors certainly have a critical role too. You know, giving the sober science that tells a very terrifying story about where our children are today and where they're headed if we don't bend the arc and change the direction that we're going. So, when all those voices come together and behind action, we're unstoppable. And it's just a matter—it's not a matter of if; it's a matter of when, and it's a matter of what is the right path. And right now, we're in that process in real time, identifying the action that's going to work. There are certainly some hurdles and pitfalls, that landmines, if you will, that will can stop our action We'll talk about those a little bit later in depth, but you know, things like the First Amendment, like federal law section 230, which are the go-to defenses for the tech industry whenever there is action sought to address the challenges. But you know, through the legislation in New York and California, age-appropriate design code, our privacy, additional privacy protections, our anti-addiction measures, I think we're really identifying the pathway that will be through rules and regulations around design and around features, and not outright prohibitions, but new default settings that lift up and center the health and safety of our children. I think that's where we're headed, and the greater the chorus of voices, the more in the coalition, the better, and everyone has a role to play to make that coalition unstoppable and powerful.
All right, what's your role in the coalition, Joe? Not just your role, but what do you see as things that need to be done?
Yeah. When I get asked this question a lot of times, again, people want, like, how do we stop this entirely, is often the conversation. And what I've come to the understanding of over the last, like I said, 7-8 years of this work is that I don't believe that we can stop it entirely. I think that is not fully possible because of the scale and the fluidity of the industry. So what I always say is that what we actually need are more stop signs, right? A stop sign is a point of friction that most people, 80, 90, 95% of people do stop for. But there are always people who just run by, right? We need a lot more friction in the system. We need some controls in place to make sure that we can validate that what they're saying is true. I'm a big proponent of reporting standards, audits, external controls that are not, like right now we're seeing companies say, oh, well, we hired a trust and safety team. Well, you should not look at us. Or we do some internal algorithmic auditing. Well, like, you know, snaps for that, right? Like, good job. But we need external people. We need this stuff reported the same as we report taxes. We need a report that's standardized that can be sent to the government on an annual basis and audited in case there are damages. We need companies to report who was involved in building that algorithm. Why did they choose to build that algorithm? What were the steps they took to train that data? Where'd they get it from? Multiple other steps that, while we may not be able to undo the machine and the way it's learned and its processes, we can map back to what were the original intentions and think again what may have caused that harm. We can learn from these things in the future. So for me, it really starts at a pretty baseline level, which is, number one, give people the rights, but even then, a lot of people don't know what those mean. All right, I consider you have literacy, you have awareness, literacy, and then action is kind of the phases. Awareness, I think we're at a pretty good steam in our society. Literacy, we're not quite there. So if you give rights, at least they're there when people do become literate enough to take action. And then what we really need is these reporting standards. So these guys, for example, can start to have data on what's reasonable. Because for the last 6 years when I've been helping draft frameworks and laws, I can tell you that a lot of the time, we're all sitting in the room mostly staring at a black box. You're getting, like, I was internal at the company. You're getting others who are stepping out and speaking about what they believe should be done. But we don't have any hard numbers because this is such a black box. So I believe by requiring certain reporting standards to the government on an annual basis, over a period of time, we'll start to see what's realistic to enforce, how we can approach them in a way that enables innovation still, because that is always their biggest argument. We won't be able to innovate. But also allows us to have safe societies, because that's critical. I'm pro-industry. I want this industry around. I want it to grow. It has had exponential value to our societies. We can't tear it down. But we do need to fix it. We need to change course. And it needs to be some guardrails put into place with law.
So Andrew, you've been staring at this black box, hammering away at it in different ways. You have a very specific, one thing I want everybody to come away from is a sense of, this is what a law looks like that will make a difference. So what is the law that you sponsored, and what does it do, and how will it help?
Great, yeah. I'll say at the outset, you know, I think it's helpful to think about when it comes to trying to protect kids in this context, right? Like, Think about the cigarette context, right? We knew and we learned that Big Tobacco knew their product was harmful and they intentionally marketed it to kids and sold it to kids, and they did that for a generation because it brought them lots and lots of money. That's what's happening here in this case. And so we're taking the very similar approach to break down some of the business model that social media companies are using as it relates to kids. And so we've introduced two bills in New York that we think strike at the heart of this incredibly destructive and harmful business practice. The first bill is called the Stop Addictive Feeds Exploitation for Kids Act. So it's the Safe for Kids Act. And what it does is very simple. There's, you know, there's a lot of things we can point to in the social media landscape, the things we want to fix. You know, maybe we don't all like certain types of videos or this or that. We're being very targeted, and we are focusing on the algorithms that the apps are using, predictive algorithms that take data points about a user's profile, where they live, who their favorite band is, what their favorite color is, and their search history. They searched for Taylor Swift yesterday. They're searching for the Trevor page today, Trevor Project today. They're searching for this or that. And then automatically curating a list of content, videos, posts, etc., to show those kids, show all of us, frankly, but really we're talking about kids here, that content, and it's designed to keep them engaged constantly, right? It's the endless scroll. It's the nonstop thing. It's the rabbit hole. And so our bill says that as a default, for minors under the age of 18, you have to turn the algorithm off. Let kids follow their friends. Let them follow their family. Let them sign up to follow the Taylor Swift fan page or the Trevor Project or the whatever, you know, the neighborhood page. You can follow anyone you want. We're not saying you can't follow anything. But what we're saying is that as a default feature, the apps can't assume that it knows what to show you next. So we can't stop the app from showing you the first thing you search for, the first image or the first video, because that's what you're looking for. But we think that the second, third, fifth, 50th, 100th, 300th piece of content after that, that is ripe for regulation, because that's how they get you. Also, as part of this proposal, we want to turn notifications off overnight, as the Attorney General said, as a default. So you have the option with a parent to turn it back on, as well as to turn the apps off overnight as well. Again, as a default feature. And that's
all. I want to hear the second one, but can I just say, look, I've been an activist, I've been a law professor, but having recently been an enforcer, what I like about this approach is you can tell when the law is being broken really easily.
Yeah. It's
and
very
that doesn't
clear.
Mean it's the only kind of law. There's others as well, but this is, if your child is getting targeted content that they didn't sign up for, they're breaking the law.
That's a violation. Exactly. We want to be very clear. We want to be very methodical to take one feature that we think is linked to some of the concerns that we've identified that we all talked to a little while ago, and go after that one feature with this bill. And that's going to be a significant improvement. Then the second bill is called the New York Child Data Privacy Protection Act. And it basically says that internet companies cannot collect data from kids under the age of 18 to monetize it. So it's the other side of the equation. So the companies collect your data, then they glue your eyes on the screen so they can sell you more ads. And there was a study done through the Chan Center at Harvard Medical School. Ironically, that was funded by Priscilla Chan, who's Mark Zuckerberg's wife, saying that in 2022, social media giants, so the six biggest companies, made $11 billion in ad sales just to kids. Just to kids. And they did that by collecting all this data about them and then intentionally keeping their eyes glued on the screens longer and longer and longer and longer and longer and longer and longer. And so we think that that should not be allowed. And there's precedent for that as well, because the federal law that I referenced earlier, the 1998 federal law, that's basically what that law says for kids under the age of 13. And we're proposing in New York to expand it to the age of 18. But we also recognize that people have agency, and with consent, you can consent to have more data about you collected and monetized if you so choose. But as a default, most kids have no idea how much data of theirs is being collected. And if given the choice, I think most of them would say, I don't want you to have this much information about me. I want to feel better about myself when I have my phone in my hand, not worse. And so that's kind of the approach we're trying to take right now in New York. Yeah. You know, I think, you know, the last thing I'll highlight here is one of the reasons why we are trying to be so targeted is because we know that there is a lot of legal uncertainty right now in the country, both from the Supreme Court level, and we're seeing the rapid turnover of longstanding precedents and things being upended constantly, but also that the tech companies are very good at using the courts to their favor. And a lot of the other states that have taken action in this space, and they've taken different approaches, they've all been shut down. They've all been stopped, or they've all been temporarily put on pause. And what we like about this bill is that it's a very different approach. And we worked on that actually with Zephyr. And so I think Zephyr's kind of provided a lot of the legal analysis and backdrop. So maybe Zephyr, you can kind of walk us through why this approach is different and we think it's going to work in the legal context, which is really the key here.
Well, I, like the Attorney General, I think there's a lot of roles to play here. And I'm just excited to see the energy in different states in different ways. But as we all know, when James Madison was drafting the First Amendment, he wanted to make sure that big social media companies could maximally profit off of children's data.
Federalist 63, was it?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. No, so the point that Andrew was making is that big tech has set up a litigation arm whose job is to challenge every bill that threatens their business model. Every bill. And it has been focused on challenging all the child safety bills in the country. And the key tool that they are using is the argument that the First Amendment bans this kind of regulation. I think this is a core level misunderstanding, absolute distortion, ludicrous, frankly, hence my reference to Madison, understanding of the First Amendment, and let me explain why. We do safe design rules all the time. We tell you that your bumper has to be this wide. We tell you the kind of material that you can use in your tires. We tell you how toasters work. We tell you about, there are design regulations. All the things I just described are design rules. Rules that limit design so that they are not safe. So the design rules are not violations of the First Amendment. They're just doing basic consumer protection. And of course, consumer protection is at its peak when we're protecting the most vulnerable, including minors, right? But there's a broad consumer argument here. That said, NetChoice is one of few. The arm of big tech that is challenging these laws has won a few preliminary cases. They're on appeal. We're going to see what happens. But what I do like about the way that the New York and California targeted model, function model, is it's airtight in my view. Not the net choice, not that the big tech companies won't challenge it against these kinds of challenges. And I think that in other areas, I also think the First Amendment doesn't apply. So I don't want to suggest that the other rules are unconstitutional. It's just this one is really locked tight. And making sure that we identify those functions that we already know are dangerous and saying that they don't apply, I think is a really important part of the legal strategy. What tech companies are doing with their legal strategy is also, though, a messaging strategy. They're trying to get you to think that regulating big tech, social media, to protect kids is in some way un-American. And as Joe said, I think it's important to not just use this First Amendment shorthand that big tech companies will use, and really think about what the values the First Amendment are intended to serve. And once you understand that, then you can see how the First Amendment isn't really at play here. And as I was privately mentioning to some of our panel earlier, I also think because there's interesting politics in the tech space, that I also don't think that the Supreme Court is going to be as hostile to tech regulation as it may have been to regulation in some other arenas.
Zephyr, you studied this for a bit. You were looking at this across the country. You alluded to kind of the litigation arm that big tech sets up. Like, what other tactics and strategies have you seen in your kind of study of this across the country as to how these companies are trying to fight back, change, you know, either challenge laws or prevent laws from being passed in the first place? Like, what are the go-to tactics that you're seeing through your work that, you know, we should all be aware of when it comes to this stuff?
Well, I'll mention a couple, but I want to hear other folks too. I mean, for one, they lie.
Well, I've got stories I'll share, but I want to hear you. Oh, you give us the top level first.
Now, this is a really important thing that you'll hear over and over again from tech advocates and AstroTurf organizations set up by big tech. They will say that if you, for instance, create a default against the addictive feed, that means that kids will not be free to find the resources they need at a vulnerable age. And that is simply false. This is not limiting what a 14-year-old or a 17-year-old or a 12-year-old can search for and find. It is, in fact, putting control back into the hands of that teenager and allowing her to seek instead of be directed with the thing that is going to addict her. So it's a major essential lie, and I feel so strongly that we just got to get rid of this story. It is not limiting the searching capacity of young people. They're also, besides AstroTurf, they're just spending a lot of money. They're spending it on lobbying. They're spending it on lawsuits. They're trying to chill lawmakers. They feel like, it's going to get sued. We're going to get sued right away. What do other people see in terms of the tactics?
Can I add a note to that, too, though? You know, the complaint that they're having now about the lack of freedom of speech is also really, they're saying that 10, 15 years ago, when they didn't have algorithms in, that they were blocking freedom of speech, right? The timeline didn't used to have this. If you remember from a design perspective, like Twitter, Facebook, all of them had their timeline, and then they either had like a discover tab or a separate section. What they found, what you hear in the conversations at the companies, was that nobody clicked on it, AKA nobody wanted it, right? But then they decided it's best for their business model that they can disperse ads in the way that they please. And so they pushed it into our timelines. So if you look at your timelines nowadays, it doesn't matter what platform, you'll see the algorithm if you look closely. Okay, on Facebook, Instagram, whatever, scroll a little bit and look, count how many posts are from people that you self-selected, and then how many it's usually like every 5 to 6 posts, you'll see either a sponsored or advertised post. Sometimes it's more, like Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. It's Twitter, okay. You'll see that, and that is the algorithm. Yeah. But that was why. And so all we're asking is that you turn back time a bit to when it was safe for kids and the general population, but especially let's get it safe for kids first, and let's see how well it goes, and then let's have a bigger conversation about how to protect adults, because it's also hurting us.
Yeah, I think they're playing on that sense of discovery that we all have had, where we found something extraordinary online and saying, they're going to take that away from you. You know, you can't have nice things, right? We can have so much nicer things if we are in control.
Yeah. You know, on that point, you know, it's what I think what's really happening here is, you know, these companies are not trying to market a product to us. We actually are the product. And, you know, which, good, bad, whatever, it's here. It's the way that tech interfaces with most of us today through our phones and whatnot. But I think, especially for kids, like, kids should not be a product for the profit making of a social media company. Like, that should just be off limits. That should just be understood. You know, and you mentioned like the ads, Joe. And I remember I had a conversation with some folks from a tech company who would fall subject to the bill that I've been proposing. And, you know, I was making this point, and I said, well, you know, if you got rid of our ability to sell targeted ads to kids, we would just have to put more ads in their feeds in order to make up for that. You know, because it's more valuable. A targeted ad is much more valuable than just a regular come buy your Happy Meal at McDonald's as opposed to, you know. And my response was, or you can just make less money off of kids. And that was just a foreign concept. When I said that, Like the eyes just glazed over, like that was just a foreign concept. Like that no one ever thought, well, gee, maybe we're okay with $4.5 billion instead of $5 billion and we're gonna like protect kids in the meantime. Like that is not what these companies are thinking about. And so when you ask them that, it's like you're speaking another language. Because that's not how they're set up to operate, and that's not how they're set up to function, and that's not their purpose. Their purpose is to collect as much data from us and to keep our eyes on these screens for as long as possible to generate ungodly amounts of money for themselves, which is why they have 11 billion reasons, citing that Harvard Medical School study, to not want to change the status quo, right? And I think that we have to keep coming back to that point because, you know, they are profiting off of the mental health of kids, and they don't care about that.
In terms of some of what we're seeing in the forms of pushback from the industry, one of them, sort of in broad terms, is an old play from the playbook of other industries, and that is sort of purveying doubt, being merchants of doubt, creating doubt. And we've seen this from in sort of the climate change space in our oil industry, who commissioned their own studies to show that climate change wasn't real, or maybe not as fast in coming as we thought it was, or who had op-eds, or who created front groups. Tobacco industry did the same thing. Social media companies are doing that now. They're trying to create doubt. Maybe the kid online who's trying to find love and support and answers can't find it. Maybe it'll frustrate innovation. Maybe it's not practical to implement. Maybe it violates the First Amendment, one of our core values. Maybe it violates Section 230. Maybe. And so it forces some people to pause and hesitate and maybe not act. And then they buy another day of billion-dollar profits. And so we're also seeing that some pathways, like through the California legislature, are not places where they can stop the action. We've had bipartisan support in our age-appropriate design code bill, unanimous support. Republicans and Democrats, not one no vote the whole time. Two houses and a governor who signed it. So what's their answer? Fight it in court. You have to change the forum. If you can't win in the legislature, you got to try to win in court. And so that's where NetChoice comes into play, the industry association. They're filing lawsuits all across the country, winning some of them. Highly resourced, making arguments, and we need to be willing to watch the law evolve and solidify, and then pick the pathway that, of course, is compliant with the law, or just overturn bad decisions, which is what we're trying to do in California with our age-appropriate design code or trial court decision. So it's the whole kitchen sink, because this is, I think they see it as an existential threat. It doesn't have to be an existential threat. They can, to your point, profit to the tunes of billions and billions of dollars instead of billions and billions and billions of dollars. Just don't hurt kids. If your business model requires you to hurt kids, it's not a very good business model. If it requires you to break the law, it's not a very good business model. Stop doing those parts. Do the other parts. The other parts are fine. But we need to hold the line as leaders, as attorneys, as community activists who care about the future of our children. Another argument that we see is, don't pick on us. Make sure that the rules apply equally to the whole industry. So we're suing Meta, and Meta's saying, we'll agree to something that applies to everyone. Okay, we'll help you. We have a law now in California. It'll apply to everybody. It'll apply to, and do you support it? I don't see you on the support list. So, a lot of the arguments are there to slow things down. Maybe, the old strategy, not now means never. And so if they can delay it, then maybe they can prevent it.
There seems to me some peculiar features of this, true tragedy. And if you're here, maybe it's because you have seen it or know people or have seen how consuming it is. But not all kids are affected. Right? And so you say, hey, look, not all kids are affected. It's the holding out those kids who are doing fine. And then they'll say, and it's a little bit to Joe's point, well, we need more information before we decide this is the cause. But they have all the information. But that sowing of doubt has meant that the in the U.S. Congress, there have been 40 hearings. it's no longer a success to have a hearing. And no legislation. And I hope there's legislation federally, but the legislation is happening in the states. And this state legislation, I think, is really important to get that sense of possibility happening. Yeah, Andrew, you were going to talk about some of what you've seen in New York.
Yeah, so aside from the profit, the ads comment we had, you know, we had one group, you know, to your point about the astroturfing, you know, we had a coalition formed, and they recruited a lot of groups that I work with constantly in my role, right? There are social service organizations, there are social justice organizations, economic justice organizations, immigrant right groups, LGBTQ groups. And they were going around to these groups, recruiting them to their coalition to fight our bill by just blatantly lying about what the bill would do. I had, when the coalition first came out, I saw one of the groups on there. I said, that's interesting because I know these people. And, you know, I was talking to them 2 weeks ago about something else. They never brought this up. So I called up the director. I said, hey, what's going on? Like, you have concerns? Well, we were told that your bill, under your bill, senior citizens who are immigrant senior citizens are going to have to pay for email addresses. I said, what? Say that again? Oh, yeah, they told us. They gave us this whole thing that your bill is going to make immigrant seniors pay for email addresses. I said, well, first of all, did you ever stop to think how bonkers that statement is? Number one. Number two, this bill doesn't even apply to senior citizens. We're talking about kids here. And number three, like, why didn't you call me? But can you imagine? I mean, and, you know, it could be, you know, we're simplifying, I think, a lot of this because we think it in very stark terms. And at the end of the day, it's very simple. Keep kids safe. But there is a lot of complexity to the tech space and not a lot of people who are as well-versed in it. And who can hear something and say, well, there could be unintended consequences, or, you know, there could be good benefits to online interactions or social media. And we don't dispute that. Social media can be a force for good or could help kids. It can do a lot of great things for all of us, right? It used to be great to, like, look at your cousin's photo album on Facebook when they took a vacation. Now you can barely find it because you're getting ads about, like, graham crackers and battery acid can cure COVID, which is, like, crazy. You know, and so there could be good here. And what's happening is that a lot of these groups were recruited to oppose our efforts with blatant misinformation. And what that did to us, A, like, we saw this playbook happening in other states. We saw them do something similar in California. It wised us up very quickly as to what the opposition was going to be. But it also forced us to play whack-a-mole and now have to, like, bat down all of these, you know, these just ridiculous lies. And that was just time we had to spend doing that in order to set the record straight, which was less time we could then spend on actually moving things forward. So they're really trying to obfuscate and delay and push. Like Rob said, you know, one more day. One more day means never. And we're seeing that play out right now in New York. Thankfully, I think, you know, similar to California, you know, they didn't get caught by that. Unanimous vote in the California legislature. In New York, our legislation has the full support of our governor, who has, you know, taken the bill that we drafted and has proposed it in her budget. And right now, our budget is due in 2 weeks, so this is an active thing being discussed and debated in the New York legislature right now. Our attorney general is fully behind this bill as well. We have bipartisan support. And so in some ways, we don't have to be distracted by the tech opposition because we're still moving ahead. But in other ways, we want to make sure that we get the record straight because I don't want anyone in this room to think that Andrew Gnardis from the Republic of Brooklyn wants to charge immigrant seniors for an email address. Okay?
That's
the main takeaway from today. If you get
Speaking of seniors, so when it's when we're at Grandpa Bonta time, so let's look into the future, right? So 10 or 20, I'll give you some time. but 10, 20, each of you, just a few minutes, what does success look like and how will we measure that? How will we know? You want to start, Attorney General?
Sure. In 20 years, I hope we can look back and tell a story that is a beautiful one about overcoming challenges, coming together collectively, engaging in action that is consistent with our values. And our society should be judged on how we support, love, lift up our most vulnerable, including our children, and that we took a stand against endless profiteering, and money and profits, and we centered people, in particular our children and their health and their safety, and we said some things aren't acceptable, and we took action. And And we also push back against the false choice that you're either for children or you're for tech companies. You can't be for both. You can be for both. You can have great innovative businesses and tech companies that lead the world, and we're proud of the ones that we have in California. We just don't want them to hurt children or be involved in anti-competitive actions. Just follow the law, but be successful within the bounds of the law. You can do that. You can be both. So we need to be ambitious enough and committed enough to demand both, a successful business community that supports and protects our children. I think we're on the right path. I'm super excited about it. I love that New York has been taking the lead. We're proud to be there right beside them. Often the states inspire other action. There's a phrase in politics in California that we're very proud of, so I'll get super California on you right here in Texas. As California goes, so goes the nation. We're proud of that. We like to lead. We like to be first. We like to be best. Again, we're in a very healthy race to the top competition with New York. They've been first. They've been best often, and we're grateful for that. And I think this is a place where our leadership can really make a difference in real lives of real children and create better opportunity and safer, more healthy spaces for generations to come.
So, Joe, what's the future that you see?
Yeah, well, a little selfishly on my side, I hope in the future there's a data grade on every single website so you know how safe it is or is not. But from a big picture, what do I aspire to see? I would say I hope we reach a point where we fully understand the monetization of data at some point in the next 10 to 20 years, and we can redistribute the wealth that's been generated off the backs of billions of unpaid laborers like us sitting in this room. I believe data creation will be the future of blue-collar labor, and the 2 or 3 hours a day that you spend on your phone, although it is problematic, actually translates into some kind of economic returns at some point, because that's what we're doing. So that's my big picture goal. I'd love to see value distributed into the society appropriately rather than hoarded into the hands of a small handful of more or less robber barons in the tech industry.
Senator?
I'll echo what the Attorney General said, and I think this is, I see enormous good that comes from this technology and these apps, and we're just trying to put some smart guardrails in place, right? The development of the car helped us get around the country, helped us, you know, transform this country, but we require seatbelts. We require bumpers, airbags. We put things in place to protect people because of demonstrated harms. And this is no different. And so for me, success is being able to harness the incredible positivity from this technology while minimizing and protecting from some of the worst harms that we identify that we can actually stop and solve.
Wow. Well, we've got just a minute for some final reflections. One thing that I don't think that is... Sorry, 3 minutes? Thank you. Without a clock, it's like a casino. You know, it's like I'm in an infinite scroll right here. Yeah.
We've been here for 6 hours.
Three hours. Right. I just one harm that I think we should just be really clear about is that it's true parents see what's happening, but a lot of parents are working so hard. They're working multiple jobs. Yeah, there are some parents who can put themselves in a situation where their kids are kind of protected from social media, but for most working families, that isn't an option. And this is partly related to, you know, one of the things they'll say, this is the parent's responsibility. This is a societal responsibility that we have to kids. And it's really important that we recognize the economic elements of this. When we think about advertising, who gets advertised to? Advertising, which, by the way, is often very discriminatory. And that this is about, as Joe was saying, democracy, but it's also about inequality. And it's about making sure that all people have that opportunity. So when this is a very inspiring panel. You know, when I think about what can happen, but everybody in here does have to play a role, because the great success of the last, you know, of the tech companies of the last 10 years is making us feel like we're impotent, that we are players in their game instead of actually authors of the future. So I want, and I think we all do, that 13-year-old girl who logs on because she likes sports to get to go follow her passion in sports without being sold really negative images that totally derail her. And we can do that. So what's your like parting thought, if you just have one more minute? And I'm sorry, I don't think we have time for questions. We're gonna have to wrap up at, yeah, sorry about that. So I'll just come down the line, Joe.
Yeah, like I said, I hope we head towards a future where data is properly monetized, we can redistribute that. I hope we have safeguards in place to make sure that we do have ways to keep this in check. And as you said, maintain a free democracy, because right now it's headed towards a very controlled place that I don't think a lot of people are super excited about.
I would say, you know, this is all about power dynamics and it's about information sharing. And, you know, we, to Zephyr's point, this is not just a parent issue. And it's unfair to say that parents have to be the ones to tackle this issue. It is a societal problem. We need to address it as such.
Where we go from here rests and lies with us. You know, Joe and the Senator, Zephyr, me, are just a very small part of that. It's the collective us, the parents and the educators and the doctors and the social workers and, yes, elected officials. The first and last word always rests with the people. And if we see something that's unacceptable, we can change it. We're not powerless to make change. We're full of power and potency to make change. And part of it starts with sort of radical truth-telling. Thank you, Joe, for what you've been doing in that space for so long while proposing solutions about where we go. You know, our whistleblowers and those who are not afraid to tell the unvarnished truth have been incredibly helpful in inspiring and spurring action. And, you know, there's many folks who can take the baton along the way. We all have a role to play. I'm going to do the best to play mine. But everyone has a role, and I think as we lament where we are today with the mental health of our children, hopefully, you know, in weeks, months, years, we'll be more hopeful about where we are because of the change that we've created. But I'm full of optimism, inspiration, and hope about where we can go. It will require action, but we are full of the power to take that action together.
Well, when it happens, you can say you were here in the room. When the plan was laid out and the democracy was revived, I am so honored to be with such real extraordinary leaders. And thank you all so much for coming today.